This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the horrors that we witnessed in Afghanistan outside the airport in Kabul particularly were really compounded by a terrorist incident yesterday where a suicide bomber took out and killed 13 US personnel, military personnel, 15 of them were wounded. And at least 60 Afghans, including women and children, were killed, as well as 140 people being wounded. The people responsible for this were ISIS-K, the Islamic State, a variant of the Islamic State. It is the worst moment yet in what has been a shocking moment for the Anglo-American attempt to evacuate Afghanistan and to take their troops home. We're joined now from Washington by Niall Stanage. Niall is associate editor of The Hill, a very respected Washington newspaper, and the White House columnist for that newspaper. Niall, you filed a very, very good piece, a brilliant piece, which I strongly recommend our readers, our listeners read. But it does capture the sense of dismay in the United States after the terrorist attack yesterday. You point out to the fact that after yesterday's incident, tragic incident, may well turn into a political catastrophe for President Biden. And it does seem that the West, the Brits, and the Americans, of course, they were the leaders of this mission. They had cover from NATO, political cover. This is, as you write in your piece, a debacle.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the withdrawal from Afghanistan and the way it has been executed has been and is an ongoing political disaster, I think, especially for President Biden. That is a separate issue, of course, as to whether the United States should leave Afghanistan.
Yes.
I mean, there's significant majorities in this country who agree that it should leave. It was President Trump who first struck the deal with the Taliban for a full U.S. withdrawal, which he had actually scheduled for earlier this year. But, I mean, there are several things that contribute to this political disaster for Biden. One was the sheer speed of the Taliban takeover.
Yes.
In the face of completely different U.S. intelligence assessments. Another was the chaos that we saw in the early stages of the evacuation with some completely shocking images. And a third, obviously, was this carnage on Thursday and the loss of so many American and Afghan lives. So it all adds up to a pretty desperate picture all around.
Yes, and in that very good piece you wrote for The Hill, Biden a few weeks ago promised the United States would not suffer what he called a Saigon moment as it withdrew from Afghanistan. Saigon, of course, was the withdrawal from Vietnam. The vivid image of a U.S. helicopter taking off with people clinging to the wheels, desperate Vietnamese who were trying to flee the terror that was believed to be coming. This, in fact, is really much worse, isn't it?
It is. I think it is, yes. I mean, the Vietnam situation was desperate in its own way. But here you have you have American troops being killed for a start, and, you know, understandably that has a political salience here that, you know, frankly, isn't really the case when non-Americans are killed. So there's that. For a start, there's the whole history and context of the Taliban, who, of course, famously sheltered or gave aid and comfort to al-Qaeda in the years leading up to the September 11th terrorist attacks. And, you know, also there's the threat of what happens now to Afghanistan. You have the Taliban seeking to assert their authority. I mean, they're obviously themselves under threat from people like ISIS-K, who believe the Taliban are a bit too liberal, a bit too wishy-washy, and I don't know where you go with that kind of worldview.
Yes.
But the overall picture here is very, very bleak. And I think the political embarrassment and vulnerability for Biden is much greater. I mean, the Saigon happened under President Gerald Ford. I don't think that was really the reason why Ford ultimately lost a subsequent election to Jimmy Carter. But for Biden, there are multifaceted dangers here.
Yes, and I mean, the mission that George W. Bush and Tony Blair described when they went in to Afghanistan, declared war on Afghanistan, really, in 2001, there were two objectives. One was to get Osama bin Laden, and the second one was to get al-Qaeda and to rid Afghanistan of al-Qaeda and to make sure that Afghanistan would not become a haven for terrorist groups. That mission has failed. Bin Laden was eventually caught in East Pakistan, undercover, one has to say, one imagines, and protection, a degree of it anyway, from the Pakistan government and elements in it, the Pakistan intelligence in particular. But the second part of the mission is proven by last night's attack to have been sadly and tragically failed. It is now a haven for the Taliban and, it appears, ISIS as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you could hardly get much more of a graphic illustration of that than what happened yesterday. I think connecting the point in your question to the point I was just making about the vulnerabilities for Biden, Biden is now in the bizarre position for an American president of asking permission from the Taliban for various things. You and I spoke when we did a podcast earlier this week about the fact that there had been some suggestion of extending the August the 31st deadline for full US withdrawal. What happened in layman's terms was that the American government asked the Taliban what they would think of that idea, and the Taliban said no. And that was largely that, or appears to be largely that. So I think for Biden, placing the United States in any situation where its policies appear to be subservient to the wishes of the Taliban is pretty disastrous. And it also goes directly to your point that the central or a central element in the American mission in Afghanistan to root out terrorism, to root out Islamic extremist groups in particular, has field. I should add just briefly, Biden did say when he spoke from the White House on Thursday, he reiterated the idea that he doesn't believe and has never believed that the United States could create a democratic society in Afghanistan. And there is a whole broader critique about whether there was mission creep for the Americans in Afghanistan, yes, trying to achieve things that were never achievable. But that is a different point to the point you and I are making, yes, here, which is about Islamic terrorism.
Yes, and it's not known as the graveyard of empires for nothing. The Soviets found that out, as indeed the British had before them. The other remarkable fact that has emerged in the last few hours, and this is beyond belief, that the Americans gave the Taliban a list of people, named people, Afghans, who they wanted to get out, and asked the Taliban to help them find these people and to deliver them to Kabul airport. Of course, what the Taliban are going to do is murder them. I mean, you referenced an intelligence failure, and there was a massive intelligence failure because the Taliban were in Kabul within hours. Some intelligence estimates said it would take them months or maybe even a year. But the other thing is to be giving them lists of people to get to the airport and get them on planes. That was never going to happen. It's hard to imagine that.
It is. That story, which was first reported by Politico, is the subject of an ongoing furor here, naturally enough. The issue is that the administration is saying that it was seeking sort of safe passage for people to the airport. The criticism, of course, is, I mean, the Taliban have been going door to door looking for people who, as they would put it, collaborated with the Americans. And the Americans, it appears, have given them lists, target lists, essentially.
This is unimaginable.
To look for. Now, Biden was asked about this at the White House, and he gave this really quite peculiar answer where he talked about the idea of safe passage to the airport. And he said that he wasn't aware of instances where actual names were provided, but he couldn't rule it out. So I don't know what that means. It's a sort of a quasi-confirmation, in a way, of the Politico story. And, you know, certainly there is significant outrage in Congress about this, but not just in Congress. I mean, I think the alarm and bafflement that you just expressed is widely shared among people who have read or otherwise heard about that story.
Now, the logistical failures here, we can assume, I think, that there were huge intelligence failures, massive. I mean, almost incomprehensible. But the logistical failure to organize this evacuation, to give Americans and Afghans who have worked in embassies, have worked as interpreters, to give them the information to somehow, or to demand of the Taliban as part of a deal, which Trump evidently didn't, to demand of the Taliban that the deal was premised on the idea that America and Britain, this is an Anglo-American failure, that they would get the people they needed to get out. The other aspect to that is it's only weeks or even a few days ago that Biden noted that if anything happened to American troops during their withdrawal, there would be devastating consequences for the Taliban. He's now got a to-do list.
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, the problem with the sort of aggressive statements from Biden saying he will, for example, take retribution on ISIS so that there would be consequences for the Taliban if American soldiers were harmed, is can he back them up? I mean, that's the basic question. There is some reporting here this morning that there is something by way of planning in train to seek vengeance, essentially, on the Islamic State for the attacks on Thursday. But we'll see. I mean, is that really going to happen when, as we are speaking now, I mean, the deadline for full US withdrawal is 5 days away? I mean, yeah, of course there could be drone attacks or something done remotely from out of country, but the whole critique of a complete US withdrawal from Afghanistan was that it would reduce America's capacity to take action against terrorist or extreme groups, whether that be Taliban, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, or anybody else. And so Biden's sort of saber-rattling at this point. There is, as I say, just the question of whether he can make good on those threats or whether that is all talk at this point.
Yes, and I note that Senator Lindsey Graham, a newfound friend of Donald Trump's, having stood against him for the Republican nomination in 2016, but an ardent Trumpite now. He wants Biden, ironically, to be impeached. But somebody should really be held accountable for the logistical failures, the intelligence failures. And, I mean, the other striking fact in all of this is that the lack of joined-up thinking between the administration in Washington and their allies, and particularly their principal ally, the British. There doesn't appear to have been any joined-up thinking about how this operation could safely be conducted without the heartrending scenes we saw, even well before this atrocity, of people desperate at the airport without food, with very little water, standing in sewage outside the airport in a drain.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely desperate scenes. To take your first point about holding people accountable, that is a demand or desire that is not confined to Biden's political critics. I mean, people like Lindsey Graham talking about impeachment is not going to happen anytime soon. But the desire to hold people within the administration accountable, whether that's in the Department of State or the Department of Defense or intelligence circles, that is, in fact, quite widespread. I was talking on background to a Democratic member of Congress fairly recently, and this person was wanting people fired because of what the congressional member considered just complete ineptitude in this effort. As far as the British are concerned, or the failure, as you put it, for joined up thinking, that is, I think, a big issue. It just seems, frankly, like the Americans decided what they were doing.
Yes.
And expected everybody else to fall in line behind it. That has contributed, I think, partly to the chaos, but also to a sense of a sort of diplomatic weakening. And I mean, as you know, Eamon, Boris Johnson, for all his other failings, was, I think, pressing at the G7, Biden and the American administration to extend their deadline, and was rebuffed in that request. Now, you would think that that's the sort of decision that is so pivotal that it would require a greater level of cooperation rather than so close to the deadline. There'd been this sort of diplomatic argy-bargy with no obvious clear resolution.
You refer in your piece for The Hill to the chaos in Kabul, leaving, and I quote, a taint of weakness and incompetence around the Biden White House. And you wonder, further down the piece, if this will be erased soon, if at all. It appears also that this may well be a moment where the looming isolationism of the United States that characterized the Trump years and indeed the Trump belief system such as it was, this will accelerate, will it not, that mood in the United States to put America first in all things?
I think it probably will. I mean, clearly the war in Afghanistan has endured for 20 years. It's cost more than 2,400 American lives. It has cost more than $2 trillion. And look where we are at the end of it is essentially, I think, many American people's
Example, being rebuffed by the Taliban. Mm. And the Taliban spokesman saying that August 31st was a red line for the Taliban. And this is this is the most powerful nation in the West. Mm. Kowtowing to a bunch of fanatics who are beating, raping, taking women out of work, taking women out of schools. These are medieval creeps.
I think it is an embarrassment for the United States to be in that situation. It's not often we approvingly cite Ted Cruz on this podcast, but he referred to the situation as a diplomatic humiliation for the United States. And I think whatever you think about Ted Cruz, is actually hard to argue with that assessment. And that is, you know, one of these elements that makes this so damaging. To your point about American isolationism and also about American standing in the world, I'm sure you and your listeners are aware that Vice President Kamala Harris is currently in Asia. She's been in Vietnam and other places. She, a few days ago, made some comment calling on American allies in that part of the world to stand up against Chinese aggression, particularly in the South China Sea. And the Chinese foreign ministry, in response, released a statement alluding to Afghanistan and saying something to the effect of, when America makes these claims, who is going to believe them?
Yes.
Who is going to believe that they will stand by their promises? That, I think, is a central element in all of this. And I know you have spoken before, not just with me, but with other guests, about the threat posed by China as it continues to expand its power and influence in so many parts of the globe.
Well, the Chinese have shut down Hong Kong. They've torn up the agreement they had with Margaret Thatcher's government, and Hong Kong is now a repressive state. The big issue there, and you refer to the South China Sea, is Taiwan, where there are 20 million people, and the Chinese care more about Taiwan than anything else, including Hong Kong. Who could have faith now that in its present mood that the United States would resist a move against Taiwan? That's just one of myriad problems that present themselves all around the globe where American interests and allies are. This raises the most severe doubts about America's will and capacity even to do anything other than stay at home and look after itself.
That's right. And I think that that also has become even sharper in the wake of the bomb attacks on Thursday, because you had a public that was already worn out or disinclined toward overseas military adventures as a consequence of what happened in both Afghanistan and Iraq. You now have American soldiers being killed. That has to reinforce the kind of isolationist or withdrawal elements that you're referring to in American public opinion. I don't know how it would be politically tenable these days to even advocate military American intervention in other places, or to even credibly articulate a desire to really provide a forceful deterrent against China in places like Taiwan or elsewhere.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Now, the midterm elections next November, that's November 12 months, may well have been in Biden's mind, although to be accurate and fair to him, Niall, I'm sure you know that Biden was never for foreign adventures, and he resisted when he was Obama's vice president. He resisted the idea that they should be in Afghanistan at all. This is not a new Joe Biden. This is the conservative, if you like, American first Joe Biden. So he's not betraying his instincts. He's actually conforming to them.
He is, although he has a kind of checkered or weird history when it comes to foreign affairs. I mean, you're quite right that in relation to Afghanistan and to Obama's surge in Afghanistan, yes, he was very opposed to that. He did famously back Bush in the second Iraq war, having opposed the first Gulf War under H.W. Bush. Yes. So he's sort of been all over the shop in a sense. But I take your point. I mean, he doesn't believe in further expansion of American, certainly the operation in Afghanistan was something that he had come to oppose in its most expansive manifestation for some time.
Now, we talked earlier in the week about the polls, and you told us that it was 50-50, 50% approve, 50% not approving, or thereabouts. I saw a poll yesterday where his approval rating was down to 41%. Was that a rogue poll? Did you see it? Are you aware of any of the public mood, as it were, having changed this past week?
So I did see that poll. I think it's too early to say whether it's a rogue poll or not. It's certainly an outlier, and it would certainly suggest a collapse in Biden's approval rating. I think, to be fair, we need to wait a week or two at least until more polls come out to see, yes, whether that level of collapse in approval is something that is going to be sustained. But I don't think there's any doubt at all that this episode has eroded Biden's standing and has, I think, come to feel like a bit of a turning point. I'm not suggesting he's you know, destined for doom and ignominy, but the fairly stable, reasonably positive approval ratings he had received in the first phase of his tenure, I think those might be gone for the foreseeable future.
Now, it's less than 6 months ago, I think, Niall, that President Biden, in one of his first important foreign policy declarations, said, "America is back," quote. And what one is forced to conclude now, if you're watching this from any place that might someday need America, the fact appears to be, Niall, that the person who's back is Donald Trump. Mm. Trump is back. The Republicans are likely to surge. It's an educated guess, or in my case, an uneducated guess. What is your best feeling about the pulse of the American people at the moment in terms of Republicans versus Democrats and the return to prominence of Trump saying, "I told you so," despite the fact that his fingerprints are all over this?
Sure. Well, first of all, I mean, I think it's clear that Biden's popularity has been eroded. That does have serious consequences in terms of his domestic agenda, which is already facing quite a difficult path forward. And of course, even though the midterm elections are more than a year away, Democrats are defending very, very narrow majorities, yes, in both the Senate and the House of Representatives. So Biden could face the quite realistic threat of having his domestic agenda stalled or derailed fairly soon. That, obviously, in political terms, is an advantage for the Republicans. Obviously, Trump is still, even at this point, the front runner should he decide to contest the 2024 presidential nomination. And he still has fairly fervent support among a large group of the Republican base. Now, whether he himself could win a national election, national general election, I'm skeptical of that because of January the 6th and all kinds of other issues. But clearly, you know, politics at some level is a zero-sum game, actually.
Yes.
And if Biden is damaged, that does help Trump and help the Republicans. I mean, there's no question about that.
Just a final thought, Niall. The biggest problem that Biden and his administration have faced in many ways is the fight against COVID and the virus. And 90 million Americans, 30% of the population, are not and have no intention of being vaccinated. Many Republican governors, notably Abbott in Texas, who's just got COVID himself, and the guy in Florida, they are actively fighting the idea of even having masks. This won't help, will it? This loss of credibility, this severe loss of credibility by this administration will not help either in their exhortations to Americans to take the vaccine and to mask and social distance. And therefore, it isn't just Afghanistan that's damaged and the people, God love them, who were depending on Americans and who worked for them there. But it is also the administration's endeavours to persuade people on the COVID matter.
I think that's a great point, and it's not one that I had even considered until you mentioned it. But I think one of the critical issues on the COVID matter is a reluctance or resistance on a part of the significant share of the population to accept authority, really, to accept that the experts, quote unquote, know best. Now, in COVID, I think it's pretty clear that the experts do, in fact, know best, and I think not getting vaccinated is stupid, personally. But the failure in Afghanistan, or the total sort of mess of Afghanistan, does, I think, fuel not just a skepticism about Biden, but feeds into this more general populist, the experts are leading us up the garden path sentiment. And I think that is a problem, and that's a point worth making, yeah.
And just to inform you of something you probably don't know, Michael Gove, who is a very senior figure in the Conservative government and maybe the man to replace our friend Boris, said a year ago that he was sick of experts.
Really?
So it's a bad time to be an expert in anything. just a final question, Niall, about the Fox News take on this and the take of the Trump base. It will only reinforce, will it not, their determination and boost their morale to keep doing what they're doing?
Yes, I think so, because I think the issue around Afghanistan goes to ideas of competence and weakness and American humiliation and a certain timidity, maybe, in Biden's case. So that's, I think, where the danger lies for Biden and where the opportunity lies for people like Fox News and the kind of Republicans you're talking about. Yes, the American people broadly think that U.S. forces should get out of Afghanistan, but that does not mean that they welcome or are okay with this display of weakness and vulnerability that we've seen, particularly in recent weeks, and that broader narrative of incompetence and weakness and a kind of fumbling of critical issues does play entirely into their case and is a significant vulnerability for President Biden.
Yeah, I mean, immediately one thinks of South Korea, where I think there are something like 40,000 American troops holding the line. There'll be lots of people worried all over the world. Now, we're very grateful to you for joining us on the podcast today. I would urge people who have the interest and the time to seek out The Hill and read the piece that Niall had published in it this morning. Thanks very much to Niall Stanich. Thanks to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.